Hello, radio family! Welcome to Divine Intervention, the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. I am your host, Daniel Fazina, and it is my pleasure to be with you today. Got a very exciting show for you. We're going to be speaking to a very intriguing individual. My special guest today is Mr. Roberts Layardon. Roberts Layardon is an author, speaker, spiritual leader, church historian, and humanitarian. He was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the first male child at Oral Roberts University. For this distinction, he was named in honor of the university founder. Thus, from the start of his life, Roberts was destined to be one of the most known Christian authors and orators of the 20th century. To date, he has sold over 7 million books worldwide, which have been translated into more than 50 languages, and is known internationally, having ministered in over 112 countries. An author of 54 books that continues to bless the body of Christ, Roberts continues to have a voice that speaks to this generation of believers and at the same time reaches out to those who are eager to read a relevant message that draws the heart closer to God. Roberts' career in ministry began at a young age when in 1979 he gave his first public address at the age of 13. Then at 17 he published his first book, I Saw Heaven, which catapulted him into the public eye. The book sold over 1.5 million copies, and by the following year, Roberts had become one of the leading public speakers in the Christian community all over the world. God inspired Roberts shortly after the publication of I Saw Heaven to write and produce a book and video series entitled God's Generals, which chronicle the lives of some of our leading Pentecostal and charismatic leaders. It was an immediate success and became one of the best-selling Christian video series in history and established Roberts as a leading Protestant church historian, a mantle he still wears to this day. His website is robertslayardon.org. That's robertslayardon.org. And it is my pleasure to welcome Roberts Layardon right now on Divine Intervention. Roberts, you are on Divine Intervention. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to be with you today.
Well, it's my honor to speak with you. You've had such an amazing career so far. You're a very prolific author and minister, traveling all over the world. So much to talk about with you. But before we get into all that, can you take us to the beginning? Tell us about your background, who you are and where you're from, and you know, what was it like for you growing up?
Well, I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1966, so that makes me 45 years old.
Okay.
I was raised in a Christian family. I was one of those guys that was, I jokingly say, was born again. And so I was always remember being in a Christian family, going to church and knowing the Lord. And the first place my parents took me after I was born, since I was born on, I think, a Tuesday, and I was out on a Wednesday, they took me to church before I ever went home. So I've been going to church my entire life.
And so, awesome heritage there.
Then I've had a vision when I was 8 years old of heaven, and then I began preaching at 13. So I've been in ministry now for over 30 years, and I kind of feel like I'm about to start the last half of my life and get to do everything over again, better, wiser, stronger, louder, and more happy. So it's kind of a good season to be in.
That's pretty cool. Now, I was reading in your bio about your namesake, Roberts. You were named after Oral Roberts. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I was reading that you were actually the first person born in Oral Roberts University. I didn't understand that. Was that mean you were born on campus? Or
it was my parents were charter class members of Oral Roberts University, and they were the first students to have a baby boy.
Oh, okay.
Oral Roberts and his wife wanted to name the first boy and the first girl. I was the first boy, so the Robertses and my parents named me Kenneth Roberts Layardon. And so that's why I had that distinction of the founder's name.
Oh,
I've spent my life answering the S on why my name's Roberts and not Robert.
Yeah. So I would imagine you get a lot of questions about that. But
yeah, so I like the name. I knew Brother Roberts and Evelyn. I was a little boy, a little toddler, in my diaper running through his house. I grew up on the campus, so I grew up around the old Roberts family. And as I began my church and so forth in California, he'd come and preach for us a couple of times a year. So he was one of my spiritual fathers. So I'm glad to have that influence as well as carry his name in the way that I do.
Very interesting. Now, you mentioned earlier that God showed you heaven, and for a lot of people, this would be kind of outside the box and like, wait a minute, what happened? Tell us about that story, because this experience really propelled you.
When I was 8 years old, just to be very blunt to our listeners here, is the Lord took me to heaven for a short little visit. And in that visit is when I got my call to ministry. And so I wrote a little book called I Saw Heaven years ago that still sells quite well, where I talk about what I saw. And I saw Jesus. I saw the golden streets and so forth. I mean, I can go into more detail if you want me to. Is that what you want me to do?
Absolutely, because this is the type of thing that we really love to feature on Divine Intervention. As you may know, the show is all about miracles and divine interventions, and we want to encourage people in any way possible to know that God is real and that He is still doing miracles and intervening in people's lives. So I'd love to know the details, and I'm sure our listeners would as well.
Well, good. I like talking about it, especially when people want to listen to it. When I was a little boy, like I said, I had just finished playing a game of baseball with my friends outside, and I went into my house, and I sat down on my bed in my bedroom, and I was pulled up out of my home supernaturally, like through the roof, as I could look down on the roof as I went up through the roof. And in a few moments, I was speeding through, I guess, the universe, and then I landed outside one of the biggest gates I'd ever seen in my life as a little boy. And I reached out and touched it. When I touched it, I realized it wasn't a dream or some type of, you know, mental thing, because I heard the Lord say, this is one of the gates.
Okay.
And I turned, and He was standing toward my left. And that's the first time that I saw Jesus in a visible form.
Now, what did you think? I mean, did you know it was Him?
Well, yeah. In heaven, there's not so many questions that we have on earth. There's more knowings.
Okay.
And so when I heard the voice, I turned to see who spoke. And when I looked at Him, I knew who He was. And so when He walked toward me, He said, I want to give you a tour of heaven today. And when He said that, the gate opened. First thing that I remember seeing inside of heaven was the golden streets that the Bible talks about, and with the golden curb with the flowers next to it, and the flowers all hummed when you walked past them. Every few minutes in heaven, to explain how that humming happens, there comes a little surge of life, energy, whatever you want to call it. And when that life or energy comes through the flowers, as I walk by them, you heard a slight humming sound as you walk past the flowers.
Hmm.
And that's the first thing I remember seeing inside of heaven.
When you were experiencing this, was this like bodily, physically? Or
to me, it was bodily and physical.
Okay.
I'm like Paul said, I don't, in the body, out of the body, I don't know. But to me, it felt like I went there, spirit, soul, and body.
Wow.
I could be wrong on that statement, but that's the way it felt to me. And when you're walking through heaven, you're experiencing it emotionally, physically, and every way that you would on earth. So it wasn't just a visionary or some type of mystical thing. It's very tangible and real. And it, to me, it's just as real as me walking through earth. It's things that I see in my office or in my home. You saw in heaven the same way, and you experienced it. And so it wasn't, to me, some type of dream or, you know, mystical vision. It was an actual trip.
Wow. And I have to ask you this. I've talked to other people who've had visions of Jesus. What was your impression of Him, and what did He look like?
Well, to me, as I remember from that visit, He stood about 6'1", 5'11", 6'1". He had hair that came down to about his shoulders. He did have a beard, and he had muscles. I remember as a little boy looking at Him, and when I was walking with Him through parts of heaven, I remember seeing his arm muscles. And so he wasn't a little weakling-looking guy. He had muscles, and he was a type of a strong, physical-looking person as well.
Mm.
And that's how I remember as a little boy. I know everybody sees things different or remember things different, but as a little boy, that's what I remember.
Wow. So how long did this trip last?
Well, I would say probably about an hour, maybe two or so for all that we did. I don't know for sure. As a little boy, you don't keep up with time.
No.
You keep up with events.
Okay.
And so I've always, people ask me those questions. I've kind of thought about it, like how long would it be there, half a day or an hour, 2 hours. And I was at least 2 hours, if not more. But as a little boy, it was more the events that I remember more than the time that I could calculate.
Okay. And did you see any other people up there?
Oh, yeah, I saw people. I saw angels. You know, people in the heaven, they all walked up that we met them. They all knew my name, and they all knew I was a visitor.
Okay.
And so that was kind of and they all knew the S, you know, the Roberts to it. And they knew how to talk to me, and they made reference I was visiting. I met ladies that were there, men that were there, and they all looked like they were in their 30s. Now, I didn't see any children or any old people. Everybody that I saw all look like they're in their 30s, is what I would say the physical age, as I remember it. angels that I saw would walk up and down the streets too. I saw nobody flying or no angels flying. I didn't see any of that. But the angels I saw were 6 to 8 feet tall, and some didn't have wings. And when their wings would move, it made musical sounds like we would hear sometimes on synthesizers or different instruments.
Wow.
So that's one thing that I do remember when I interacted with some of the angels that I met while I was there.
Did you know any of the people personally?
No, I did not know any of the people personally. Only one I knew was Jesus and just the folks who introduced themselves to me.
Wow. Okay. So how did this trip end, and what was your reaction to this?
Well, the trip ended after we did a few more things. We were in the River of Life. We went to what I call a praise service and different things. And at the end of it, that's when the Lord spoke to me about his ministries, we call it here on earth, work for him in the work of the Lord, and to run and preach while I was yet called young. And that meant I would start very early in my age. And when he finished praying or giving me that commission, I left. And on my way back to earth, I met my angel. And that's kind of how that vision or that experience ended.
When you say your angel, what do you mean?
Well, I think everybody has at least one angel that has been given some type of divine commission to assist you, to be a part of your life, and to help you. I think sometimes some people may have more than one, but I think we all at least have one. We sometimes call them a guardian angel.
Right.
I know that's a biblical term, but so I met the angel that was assigned to me. The angel flew up next to me and said, I've been assigned to you. I will assist you. I will help you, and spoke several things to me. And many times when I'm out about on my trips or wherever I may be, I sometimes can still sense the presence of my angel. That interaction made me aware of my angel's presence even to this day.
Does your angel have a name?
Yes, and that's my name, and I don't tell it.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, some people want to name their angels and get into all this kind of thing, and I do know my angel's name, but just for the sake of not causing weirdness, I don't talk about that.
Oh, well, I mean, we're all about weirdness on this show, so don't worry about that.
Okay.
We feature people.
I'm not trying to be spooky or trying to be, you know, super elite, but I try to focus on the things that really, you know, can benefit people or encourage people. And sometimes there are things that we could talk about that I don't know how to explain. And the more I explain them, the weirder they get. I learned not to try to even go there.
Okay.
How would you explain creatures that I saw in heaven that we have no relationship to how they are on earth? It was a little bit of like this animal or that animal, and it gets weirder in their imagination. Until you see it, you really can't know what I'm talking about. So I've learned not to try to talk about it, not because I don't want to. I just don't know how to.
I understand. Yeah, there's obviously there's a lot of things in heaven that we just can't relate to on earth. When Jesus talked about heaven, he used parables to try and tie in some earthly imagery that we might be able to relate to, but unless you've been there, you just can't really fully understand. And I've talked to other people who've had visions of heaven or who have been there, and they try to explain things too. I didn't know anything about animals up there, but if you say there are, then probably there are. I was wondered about that, like, where do my pet dog, where does he go when he dies? You know, things like that.
I don't know if every pet goes to heaven, but I know there's animals there.
Okay.
I mean, how can the Lord ride back on a white horse if there's not a horse up there to ride back on?
That's a good point. I mean, he made everything himself.
About
and
animals.
It's an interesting question, but okay, so you come back to Earth. You're 8 years old. You just land back in your room, and what's going on in your mind at that point?
You know, what just happened, and then in my personality at that time, I didn't talk much about it because I didn't want people to think I was strange, and I kept it to myself for many years.
My, how things have changed, huh?
Yeah, well, it's totally changed. I'll tell everything.
Yeah.
Write books and tell everything.
That's
so
great.
The Lord told me to, when I was about 16, 17 years old, he told me to write that story in a book. And I wrote a little book called I Saw Heaven, and he told me that book would win more souls than I would in person.
Hmm.
And so every day and every week here in our ministry office, we get letters from people who have read the book and gotten saved or came back to the Lord, as well as some people whose family members are reading the book, knowing where their friend or their family member is at, because heaven's a real place.
Hmm.
It's not spooky. It's not a bunch of clouds. It's a planet, if you can call it that. That's where God lives, angels lives, and those who've died in faith live. And we're all going to go there. Those that believe in Jesus will go there. And so it is a place that has houses, it has buildings, it has streets, it has the River of Life, it has trees, it has animals, it has birds, It has the deity is there, and you have angels that are there.
Mm.
And heaven and earth are aware of each other. They're not absent. It's like we're aware of heaven to a degree, and heaven is aware of earth to a degree. And your family members are aware of each other, too. Maybe not in the details. You get to heaven, you'll know that was your biological family. Even though the spiritual side of the family of God's people is stronger than your biological, but yet there's still awareness of that.
Hmm.
And so it's a very wonderful place to be. And the greatest thing about heaven to me is there's no resistance in the atmosphere. When you're walking and living in heaven, there is no negative thought. There is no opposition. There is nothing but acceptance and love and lift the atmosphere towards you. And of all the things that I would think that I miss the most is I miss living in an atmosphere where there is no resistance, no opposition, nothing coming at you emotionally or spiritually that is going to pull up a negative feeling. Live in a euphoric, blessed type of happiness.
Wow.
That's the only way I know how to explain it. And to me, that's worth getting saved and going to heaven for, if nothing else.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to get there myself. I'm so excited when I talk to people like you who've actually seen it and experienced it. It's just amazing. Friends, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Robert Laerdon, and I am your host, Daniel Fazina, and you're listening to Divine Intervention, the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. Our special guest today is obviously no exception to that. Roberts, now, after you wrote this book and, you know, God commissioned you to go into ministry, how did your life proceed from there, like, let's say, from your teenage years on?
Well, like I said in the beginning of the show, at 13, I preached my first sermon.
Okay.
God's always called me to be a preacher, so I've done no other type of public work but being a gospel preacher, and I'll die being one of those. So I begin preaching, and then I begin writing books in my late teens. And I began my national, international ministry. By the time I was in my early 20s, I was traveling the world and speaking. So God put me on the fast track to his purpose. And I didn't obey all the normal routes of how people go into ministry, because by the time, like I said, I was in my early 20s, I'd already been to overseas, speaking all the national camp meetings.
Mm.
And so that's what I began to do. And I've been doing that my whole life. When I was 12, I had another experience. Our show was called Divine Intervention. It's when Jesus walked back into my front room and told me this through the lies of his generals, know why they succeeded and why they would fail, because there'd be a generation would come that need to know these things if I'd be faithful to obey this commission. Which meant to me, this through the lives of great individuals that God chose to lead revivals or movements of his spirit, and know why they succeeded, and if they made mistakes or if they came short, why did they do that? Not to be judgmental, but to learn the lessons so that we can help those that are coming jump over the mistakes and hit bullseye more accurately in their life and their calling.
Mm.
And so that second visitation is also a major move in my life. The heaven one got me into the calling and knew what I was called to do. It is the encouragement that keeps me going when I feel down or kind of overwhelmed by things. And then that second part is to study the lives of men like Wigglesworth, John Wesley, Martin Luther, William Booth of the Salvation Army, A. Allen Branham, women and all these people that God used in the Pentecostal world and the evangelical world, because at first I thought, how boring could it be to study the lives of preachers?
Well,
and,
I've been reading your books.
Girl, that's what I thought, because most of the preachers that I knew were Pentecostals that were overweight, bald-headed, and had what I call Jimmy Swaggart hair, and I just did not want to do that. But I began to read their life stories, and I fell in love with something that was absolutely intriguing, to see an average person that God would pick out of all the billions in the world and give them a mandate, and them to obey it and to affect the church world and society of their time was phenomenal, because most of these people shouldn't have made it. Catherine Kuhlman shouldn't have made it. I mean, in the time when she had her divorce, the church didn't think a divorced person could hardly even go to heaven. And here she was, and God blew on her that great miracle ministry after her divorce. So,
well, yeah, I mean, God can use anybody. And, I had the honor of speaking with Joan Hunter not long ago, and she similarly as well. She went through a nasty divorce, lost everything. God restored her, and she has an amazing healing ministry, you know, to this day. And I've been reading your book, God's Generals, The Healing Evangelists, talking about people who shouldn't have made it. And you talk about Jeffries in there and Bosworth, who was, you know, he was partially paralyzed and, became a preacher. I mean, you know, God healed him and did all sorts of amazing work in his life. I really enjoy your work and what you do, and I really identify with it. I'm kind of a historian myself. I've always been known as like the historian for my family and the archivist and stuff. So I really love what you do. You are one of the most prolific church historians that there is. You have a huge collection of church memorabilia and history. And you know, like I said, your book God's Generals has been an amazing blessing to me. The Healing Evangelist. Once again, friends, we are talking with Robert Zlayerden. And he is a prolific author and a minister. Highly recommend checking out his books, God's Generals. It's an entire series. Just an awesome blessing. So, Roberts, what's your favorite part about being able to travel all over the world and meet all these amazing people and seeing God work?
My favorite thing?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I've been asked that question in a long time. My favorite thing is probably meeting different people in different cultures.
Ah.
And watching God worked the same way, whether you're in Africa, Asia, South America, Russia. He does the same thing, and people are the same way. Watching that happen is great. But I think for me personally, besides watching God move, is making friends with all different kinds of people around the world.
Mm.
I've been to 112 countries
wow.
so far in my life, and some of them multiple times. And making friends that you can have makes you feel real warm and fuzzy on the inside.
It sure does, and with God's family, we have family all over the world now, right?
Yeah.
That's an amazing thing.
We're just now beginning to work in North Africa in the underground world. I've been living the last 2.5 years in London, heading up a Bible school there, and then on my weekends or extended times off, I fly into North Africa and work in those underground churches in the Muslim countries. Now, there is some miracles of divine intervention going on in that part of the world that once it opens, and once it gets out, we're going to be astounded by what God has been doing behind the Islamic curtain.
Well, what's the current state of affairs and the atmosphere like right now over there?
It's very intense against the Christian world and against the Western world. So you have to be very careful and very wise. It's kind of like it was when I went into Russia back when it was communist.
Okay.
You have to be very careful. You have to be escorted secretly to certain places, and sometimes your Bible studies or your dinner meetings, because we'll have them come over for dinner,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be extra guests there, and while you're eating, you can talk about the Lord. So it's a whole different type of way of ministering. And there's hungry believers, and what's happening over there in a phenomenal way is that Jesus is appearing to people in vision form. I'm telling you, he seems to be working overtime in appearances of angels and himself to people in their homes, in their jobs, walking down the street. He'll walk up to them and tell them, I am the Lord Jesus, and da-da-da-da, and they start getting saved.
I've heard about that.
Don't know what to do once they get saved. So that is phenomena right now. I mean, it is outstanding.
That is awesome. Roberts, I want to hear more about this. This type of thing is very intriguing to me, but we have to take a quick break right now. Friends, our special guest on Divine Intervention today is Robert Zlayerden. He is an author and a minister and a church historian, and he's got some great stories. So we're going to hear more from him right after the break. Stay with us on Divine Intervention. Hey, this is Daniel Fazina of Divine Intervention Radio. The Bible contains some incredible stories of miracles and divine interventions. Jesus calmed a raging storm, healed paralytics, and even raised the dead. But are these types of events still happening today? The answer to this question, as you will see from reading my books, Divine Intervention, Amazing True Stories of God's Miracles Today, Volumes 1 and 2, is an emphatic yes. Contained within each book is a collection of amazing true stories that attest to this fact. You will read the astonishing firsthand accounts of people who have been healed of paralysis, terminal cancer, and AIDS through prayer. You will see the love of God powerfully transform the life of an Islamic terrorist. You will witness the liberation of the demon-possessed, the resurrection of the dead, and much more. Prepare to be awed and inspired as you experience divine intervention. More information about Divine Intervention, Amazing True Stories of God's Miracles Today, Volumes 1 and 2, can be found at DivineInterventionRadio.com or by calling 866-381-BOOK. That's 866-381-2665.
Tired of political correctness?
I'm offended, therefore I am.
Tired of nothing making sense?
What is controversial about not killing your children?
Waiting for someone to tell it like it is?
To say that it's a peaceful religion, you have to reject all of its history.
The wait is over. The greatest battle isn't between good and evil. It's between truth and lies.
The most powerful weapon in the world is the truth.
Join Cloud 10 Pictures, Kevin Sorbo, and experts from across the nation as they tackle 12 big lies that are destroying our world.
What if the world we think exists doesn't?
Human beings are in some way twisted.
Women are clearly better. Make sure my wife knows I said that.
The industrialized world is dying.
According to the Quran, I deserve to be killed.
This is a holy war.
God exists. No way around this.
And if he existed, wouldn't you want to know?
See the world as it really is. Get the 12 biggest lies today. Available now at selected retailers and online everywhere.
First Steps to Success gives you the tools to remap your internal beliefs about yourself, about your money, and about others. You'll learn a simple but powerful system to create success in any environment, as well as business building, leadership, sales, and marketing skills to create the lifestyle most only dream about.
Prior to getting started with Danny, I was a civil engineer working paycheck to paycheck, no retirement, no savings. A lot of dreams and goals and couldn't figure out how I was going to get to those. Started plugging into Danny, started my own engineering business, and this year we'll do about $600,000 in revenue. I paid off $50,000 of debt in 2.5 years. More than the money, a great relationship with my wife and my kids. Just amazing 2.5 years.
First Steps to Success with Danny Johnson is about becoming the leader you were called to be. More information about Danny Johnson and First Steps to Success can be found at DannyJohnson.com or by calling 866-760-8255. 866-760-8255.
Have you heard the story about the terrifying dragon created by God?
Dragons, just the word conjures up all these images.
They look like big reptiles with long tails, with scales, sharp teeth, claws.
They're carnivorous and they're basically going to gnaw your face off.
Could actually be stories about what we today call dinosaurs.
Marco Polo's writing about dragons. Alexander the Great is talking about his giant lizard.
How did the people who carved that stone 800 years ago have carved a stegosaur?
Where in the world did all those images come from?
Do you believe in dragons or dinosaurs?
Try to explain away human encounters with creatures which we would call dragons.
Creation or evolution?
Clearly, science has shown this dinosaur died out very recently.
This is one of the greatest paleontological discoveries ever.
Man or God?
Confirms the Bible's history that dinosaurs and people lived at the same time.
Cloud 10 Pictures proudly presents Dragons or Dinosaurs, DVD and book. Ask for it at fine Christian retailers everywhere.
Divine Intervention is supported by the Other Perspective Media recording artist, poet Billy Lamont. Poetry, music, film, video, publishing, art, activism, photography, philosophy, Jesus. The Other Perspective 777, a sacred art sensory experience. More information about poet Billy Lamont's CDs, books, and Other Perspective Media can be found at www.billylamont.com. That's www.billylamont.com.
Hey, this is Plum, and you're listening to Divine Intervention Radio with Daniel Fazzino.
Welcome back to Divine Intervention, the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. I am your host, Daniel Fazina. Our special guest today is Robert Layardon, who is an author and a minister and a church historian, and he's been sharing some amazing stories of how God is moving in the world and performing miracles. Welcome back, Robert.
Good to be back with you.
Awesome. So before the break, we were talking about North Africa and that you've been doing ministry there, and you've been talking about how God is showing up to people in theophanies, dreams, and visions in the Muslim world. Tell me about some of the experiences you've had over there.
Well, the Muslim world, or North Africa, if you study the history of it, just give it a little history background, that was where at one time was a stronghold for Christianity.
Right.
The seat of Christianity was almost, or I say the Rome of Christianity was almost in Carthage in North Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But then the barbarians and the Muslim raids begin to come and begin to change that world. And most of the ancient mosques that you have in North Africa are built on the foundation of an ancient church that was there before.
Oh, wow.
And so there are great wells to be dug open again in North Africa, which I think the missionary work and the prayer work needs to be done. But what's happening is there is a revival of Islam in the world. That's why you see all the Islamic rising up throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
They believe they're in a special time according to their belief system of earth changing and their time to take over. And that's why you see the rise of Islam in the world. That's why there was Osama bin Laden. This belief is causing them to rise. But at the same time in North Africa, where Islam is dominant, Jesus and angels are appearing to people. I've met, I guess, I don't know, I would say 50 to 60 people that I've talked to personally that have had Jesus appear to them or angels appear to them, and they got saved, and now they're looking to grow as Christians or want to fellowship with other believers. And when you're over there, you don't have really public church meetings. You
right.
have, you go into their home, and you may be having been invited for a meal. And the meal may have, you know, 10 people at it. And that meal is time for you to eat with them and discuss the Lord and teach things and let them ask questions. Now, every once in a while, you'll have a little bit bigger Bible study where you actually get up and you give it a sermon or a teaching. But mainly it's done on that scale because it's very dangerous in some parts of those worlds. They would kick me out, but they would imprison or martyr some of these folks who have left Islam and changed their belief into Jesus.
Wow.
And so it is very intense there, but it is phenomenal. I think when this actually opens and there's freedom of speech and people can start telling what's been happening and what happened to them, we're going to be amazed at the visions of Jesus and angels that have happened to these people.
I think it's phenomenal. You know, in some of these places where, you know, missionaries are just not allowed and there's no public churches, sometimes I guess God has to use, he has to intervene directly to get people's
yep.
attention and to reveal himself. So I'm very excited.
He's willing to do it.
Yes. Yes, he is. Now, you've had...
Let me tell you one story real fast.
Sure.
This, like I said in the earlier part of the broadcast, I've been living the last 2 years in England, and they sent a young man from Morocco as an Islamic evangelist to London. And he was there to convert the British and the people there to Islam. And one night, he woke up, and Jesus was sitting on the edge of his bed and told him that he had a work for him to do and that what he was doing, he had something better for him, and told him what church to go to and that he'd have a man to meet him there. And so I always thought that Jesus was out there promoting one of the local churches. So he went to the church, or told him to go to Kensington Temple in Notting Hill Gate area of London.
Okay.
So he walked into the church, and, you know, we charismatics are happy, clappy, jumpy, shouty people, and he thought they're all a bunch of nuts.
Yeah, they don't do that in mosques, right?
Yeah. He was about to leave, and the pastor, Colin Dye, looked out from the platform right in the middle of the last song and stopped the song and said, "You, back there, come here." And turned his life around, and now he is a Christian evangelist on his way back to Morocco to convert them to Christianity.
Wow.
So,
how long ago did this take place?
This happened probably about 5 years ago.
Wow. Incredible.
And he's become one of my very best friends, and we support him financially, and we are very much... I want him to come to the States and tell a story.
I would love
to... He looks like a terrorist. He looks like a terrorist, and he's Middle Eastern. But he is so in love with Jesus and so outspoken about his faith that they just can't stop him, and it's phenomenal.
Well, yeah, I mean, when the Lord himself appears to you, I mean, you can't really argue with that. I mean, how are you going to be afraid of man after that happens to you, right?
Oh, that's for sure.
Well, I'd love to talk to that gentleman, so be sure to put me in touch later, okay?
I'll do that.
That's great. Now, you talk about living in London. I understand that London has a lot of Muslims now who are actually rising up. There's mosques being built all the time there, and the church is kind of caught in the middle between Islam and a secularized British society. Can you talk about what the atmosphere is like there from your perspective?
Well, yes, I can, and hopefully people will take missionary trips to go to England and Europe to help do work. I've been going to England for the last 20 years, but I've lived there in central London for 2.5 years. We're having an invasion of two things in England right now, and you mentioned them, secularization of society, or an aggressive secularization, and an Islamic group that is coming. Now, they're a minority, but they're very loud.
Mm-hmm.
And the British people, as sweet as they are, they're acting like they did to Hitler in World War II. They're trying to appease this thing instead of confront it.
Okay.
And if they don't confront it, we're going to fall into a person to show up politically and spiritually to move. Because the number one mission field of the world outside of North Africa, in my opinion, is England and Europe.
Mm.
If we do not win the battles spiritually and politically in Europe right now, today, in this time that we're alive, we're going to see before we're dead a dark age come over Europe and England, and then go back into a modern withdrawal of human rights, spiritual liberties or religious liberties. All the things that we fought for is going to disappear.
Right.
And so when they win, if they win that, it is the launching pad from London into America. And with the political situation and the spiritual, it is setting the stage to receive that spirit and try to appease it. You cannot appease a principality. You cannot be quiet in the face of a roaring Islamic spirit. You've got to be strong, direct, and bold, and not be intimidated. And I don't care how they look or how they act. See, the Muslim world does not allow freedom of thought, does not allow freedom of discussion or disagreement. If you disagree with their belief system, they kill you or imprison you.
Mm.
So when
wow.
people come into the West where we can say, well, I don't believe that, or the Quran's not that, or the Bible's not that, we here have matured in society to where we can have differences of opinion without being an enemy.
Wow.
And so we're having a spiritual collision. We're having a cultural collision, and if I could talk to the listeners, I know we want to go to Africa. I know we want to go to Asia on missions trips and the places that are good to go, but you can get saved in Africa. You can get raised from the dead in Africa. You can get sent as a missionary out of Africa, but you cannot get that in Europe.
Hmm.
Europe is in a spiritual stalemate that we need people to take their vacations and their missions trip and go to England and go to Europe and do prayer walking, pass out tracts, work in the churches they can to help lift the people and support people that are living there as missionaries, because it costs a lot for people to live in Europe and live in England.
Right.
And so please, people, the next time they want to go on a mission trip, think England, think France, think Germany, think
right.
Luxembourg. And so I don't know anybody. Well, take a dart, throw it on the British map, and wherever the dart goes, go there and make that your missionary field for 2 weeks.
That's great.
You don't need to be spiritual. You just need to be willing to go and let God use you.
Right. Take that step of faith. Friends, if you're just joining us, we are speaking with Robert Layardon. He is an author and a church historian and a minister. You're listening to Divine Intervention Radio, and I am your host, Daniel Fazina. Robert's talking about Europe and the state that's going on over there. I was in France. I studied there, studied in Italy, studied in Spain. I just remember being very struck with what I saw when I went to the south of France. Now, this is back in 1999, and I went to Marseille, France, which is on the southern coast, and I was shocked because it looked like an Algerian city. I mean, there were mosques everywhere. Most of the people I saw were Arab, and it just looked like I was in, you know, the Middle East. I was there with two friends. One was an Algerian, one was a Tunisian, and they took me to the mosque there, and I got to see the Arab ghettos and stuff. But just the whole city, it looked like it had been conquered or taken over already, and this was, you know...
They call that the gateway to North Africa.
Yeah, well... It looked like I said, looked like Africa or the Middle East, and it looked like it had been a conquered city. And this was, you know, going back 10, 12 years ago. So I can imagine what the state is like now. But that impression always stuck with me. And, you know, people say that if you want to know what track America is on. You look at Europe now, and you know, France, England, London, they're all having this problem. And I've spoken to former Muslims who came here to America to do culture jihad, to take over from within. I mean, I guess apart from going overseas to do missionary work in Europe, what would be your best advice to someone to how to reach out to the Muslim community, maybe even here in America?
Well, one, I think we need to educate ourselves on what an Islamic person believes. It's more than a religion. It's a culture. It's a government. It's an economic system as well as a religious system. I think many times we don't educate ourselves to understand the Quran or the belief system and what they believe about us. You have to argue with an intelligence with answers that make them know that you know what you're talking about. And secondly, I would say signs and wonders, doing miracles or having God perform some type of sovereign compassionate act in front of them or to them or in their view.
Yeah.
Those two things is what we need to educate ourselves and to believe God for the supernatural.
Right, they'll respond to the supernatural, right?
Right. Now, a lot of them believe in the supernatural. They believe in Jesus. They don't believe he's the Son of God. They believe he's a prophet.
Right.
So they do have some of our belief systems of personalities in the Quran, but they don't believe it the same way we do. But he was a prophet, not the Son of God, and Muhammad was the last prophet. And there is, I mean, when I went to England, I realized I didn't know enough about the Islamic belief system to even properly witness. And so I began to take courses and talk to people to educate myself better, and I'm still learning. I think America is behind in that because we are so loud and we're so strong in our beliefs, we sometimes think we can just bulldoze our way through. But we're going to have to do with them in supernatural means and with correct intellectual understanding of what we're talking about.
Okay. So everyone at home, take note and take Robert's advice, and hopefully we can change the world. I mean, let's face it, we have the spirit of the living God within us, and when we do God's will, he can do great things through us, and we can change the world. Now, speaking of doing God's will, I have to ask you this, because you've had some amazing experiences where God himself and Jesus has revealed himself to you and told you specifically what you're supposed to do and what your calling is. Now, for the average person out there who may be struggling with, what's my calling? How do I follow God? What did he design me to do? Let's say they haven't had a theophany or Jesus appear to them and speak to them directly. What would be your advice on how they can find out what God's will is for their life?
Well, there are several ways I think that a calling can come to a person. One could be that by being faithful to do the works of the Lord that are at their hand, through their church or through their neighborhood, by being faithful, you discover your ultimate destiny is one way. Another one is one day you have an inner knowing. The third way that person can come into their calling or be aware of it is more dramatic, something like what happened to me. Now, none of these three is better than the other one. They're all, calling is calling. So somebody thinks, well, because you had a vision of heaven and your call came to you, you must be extra special or more powerful than the guy who discovered it through faithfulness. No, I don't think that's true. I think everybody finds their calling, and every calling is significant, every calling is powerful, and every calling has greatness in it. So don't let how one discovers their calling limit what they feel they can do or how powerful they can be in their calling, is what I would like to say first.
Okay.
But I think more people discover their calling by an inner witness and an inner knowing than they do any other way. They just have an inner knowing that this is what they're supposed to do, or they think this is what it is, and they start trying it, and they start working it, and it becomes a passion that consumes them.
Mm-hmm. Passion.
Another way you can find a calling is what you hate is a thing that may, meaning that you're called to help fix that problem in the earth. If you hate sickness, you may be called to the healing ministry. If you hate folks wandering their life in, aimlessly, and that evangelistic call can come to you. So sometimes what makes you angry, what makes you upset, what frustrates you is another way to discover your calling as well.
Ah, that's an interesting take on it. I have not heard that one, but it does make a lot of sense. Yeah, whatever your pet peeve is, if you see something wrong in the world and you want to go fix it, that may be a good indication that you're called to do that.
Yeah, not sit there and just throw stones at everybody. Go out there and become a part of it and become a part of the answer.
Right, right. I also find that many times the gifts that we have and the talents that we have are part of our calling, or that's how God prepares us, to go into that that ministry or that calling or what have you. So your passions correlate with your talents and your desires. So when you put all those things together, your talents, your desires, and your passion, and you do, you know, you're serving God and you're serving man with those talents, I think that's where people really find fulfillment and, you know, walking in God's calling.
And not everybody has to be a behind-the-pulpit preacher. They can do their ministry outside of the box that we all think we're supposed to be in.
Right.
And so if somebody has a calling or a destiny outside of that box of suit and tie and pulpit, well, that's okay. And I think the church is growing up enough now to begin to recognize people that are outside of the box of the regular type of call that people can be supported and just bought.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I find that the modern-day churches, at least the ones I've come in contact with, are more and more outside-of-the-box thinkers and, you know, appreciating people in marketplace ministry and all different types of activities and ministries that are outside the church. So that's a wonderful thing. Now, I wanted to talk to you some more about your travels all over the world. You've been to how many countries now? Over 100?
112 countries.
112 countries. Is there a particular place that you really have an affinity for and that it's just your favorite place to be, that you just love being there?
Well, my favorite city in the world is London, England.
Okay.
I could live there for the rest of my life. Outside of America, America's my home, and I'm proud to be an American, and I will always stand up for her and fight for her anywhere I'm in the world. But if I had to choose another place outside my home country, it would be London, England.
And why is London so special to you?
England, for me, London, England is a mix of modern and old, which appeals to my natural side and my historical spiritual side. You got the two meshed together.
Right, right.
In England, or in London also, you have, it's a world city, really, and you have so much of the world in that city. And when I speak at Kensington Temple, the church I work with over there, when you go, hello, you just spoke to 119 different people groups. And so, you know, it blows your mind. I mean, in America, New York City, and in L.A., you have a good cross-pollination of different cultures. But London just seems to have everybody there, and it's wonderful.
That's
and
cool.
I like the culture. I like the people. I like everything about it. And it's like, now, if I had a place where I like to go vacation, it would be at East Africa. I love the Kenya, Tanzania. The people there are wonderful, and also all the safari lands, the Serengeti. I could live in that part of the world for short seasons of my life and watch the animals and on the weekends.
Awesome stuff. Again, about you know, you've been to many different countries. You've ministered all over the world. If you could pick out maybe one or two of your most favorite miracle stories that you've seen or witnessed, can you share those with our listeners?
Most favorite miracle stories I've ever seen or witnessed in my life.
Yeah.
Let's see. It would probably have to be when I was in Russia.
Okay.
When it first opened, we were having a crusade, probably about, 3,500 to be conservative. And I remember the night that I was preaching, and I could not seem to make connection with the crowd.
Okay.
And that was very unusual, especially in the early days after the communism. And I just heard the Lord say, let me do miracles, and you step back. And it's like, I guess I was being too pushy, I was being too fleshy or something. I was just trying to make it happen, it wasn't happening. And the Lord said, take a step back. And this was right outside of Moscow. And I forgot the name of the little town, probably about an hour outside of Moscow.
Okay.
And I stepped back, and I just told the crowd, I said, you know, I need to just step back here. The Lord just spoke to me. He wants to do something special. And so I just kind of stepped back physically, took 3-4 steps back from the podium. And all of a sudden, like a wind, it's the way it was sensed to me, began to blow on the left side in the balcony. And he went through the balcony.
This is indoors?
Indoors.
Okay.
Scream and react for two things. People were getting healed, and demons were coming out at the same time.
Wow.
And this went on for like maybe, I guess, 12, 15 minutes as he went through the crowd. And you could actually see it as the crowd began to react, as he went across the balcony and came down to the bottom floor. And by the time we got done, we had blind, deaf, crippled, all kinds of things, people being healed, and we had people getting up off the floor, out of their chairs, that had been delivered from evil spirits. And, I mean, we had everything from screamers to crawlers to, I mean, I don't go for all that, but that night, it all happened. That happened to be one of my most wildest, and it was something I learned real early in that meeting, that God doesn't need me. and he can just push me out of the way and let him be who he needs to be. And it is fun to watch God do it.
Yes, it sure is, I'm sure. Whenever I hear stories like that or I experience things or witness things like in churches or where people are ministering, I see people get healed. It always energizes me. I just love that. And I think about some of my friends who are not believers. Maybe they're atheists or agnostic, and they're missing out on just the most exciting life. I it breaks my heart.
Well, it's available for them that won't
get
it. Come on and investigate, because God is not bothered by those who come with lots of questions and lots of doubt. Come on into the meetings, come on into the places, and just sit there and look, serve, heal. And God is not bothered by that. God is not angry with that. So I would say to anybody, if you have questions and you think it's a hocus pocus or you're open but you're not quite sure, well, come on. Look around, ask questions, and get a feel for yourself, because God is not bothered by people who come with a heart to say, okay, I don't quite know about this, but I'm willing to at least look at it, at least try it out.
Hmm.
And God will accept that.
I love that. That was actually one of my questions. I wanted you to speak to somebody who is struggling with doubt or unbelief, and I guess you just answered that, so that is great. Friends, once again, we are speaking with our special guest, Robert Lairdon, and you are listening to Divine Intervention Radio, the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways, and I am your host, Daniel Fazina. Robert, we're just about out of time, but one final question for you. You know, you've had such an amazing ministry over the years. You're a prolific author, writer, minister, church historian. I'm sure you have a lot to go with your ministry. You said you're starting your life over again for the second half. But hypothetically speaking, if the Lord were to call you home tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered after you're gone?
Well, I'd like to be remembered as someone that helped represent Jesus in a very real and powerful way. And secondly, I'd like to be remembered as a person that help people walk in their gifts and their callings more accurately and more powerfully, and to recover them who have made mistakes that thought it was over, because God is a God of a second chance, third chance, and fourth chance. That I was a guy who reached out to those who had been rejected for whatever reason and helped them come back into their place in the body and a place in their calling and produce good fruit that remains.
Mm. That is awesome.
That would be my goal.
Well, I think you are achieving that, and I have no doubt that you will complete that when your time is up. So thank you so much. Would you mind praying for our audience before we go?
Yes, no problem. Father, I pray for those that are listening right now. You know who they are, and you know where they are at this moment. I ask that you reach down from heaven and touch them in the area where they're hurting or they need help. Give them answers. Heal their bodies. Give them solutions to their problems. And give them a way out of their difficulties. You're a way maker, so make a way for them to come out of their trouble. And Father, give each person good friends. Give each person financial help. Give each person new hope inside of their heart and their mind. And I command the spirit of fear and depression and anxiety to leave their soul, so joy and peace can dominate them. We pray for God to heal you and to bless you today. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, Robert Lairdon. Again, thank you so much for taking the time out to share your testimony, your thoughts, and your insights on divine intervention. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Well, friends, that about does it for this episode of Divine Intervention. Once again, I am your host, Daniel Fazina, and our special guest has been Robert Lairdon. You can check out his works. His book series, God's Generals. You can check out his first book. It's called I Saw Heaven. He talked a little bit about his journey to heaven there. I hope this episode has inspired you to know that God is real and he is still doing miracles in the world, intervening in people's lives, and changing the world one life at a time. God willing, we'll see you again next week for another exciting episode of Divine Intervention. Take care and God bless. Hey, this is Daniel Fazina. Thanks for listening to my show, Divine Intervention. I hope you have been inspired by the many miracle testimonies we have featured and that your faith has increased. More information about the show, free downloads, and podcasts can be found on the web at www.divineinterventionradio.com.